Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 12th, 2012, episode 528, brought to you today by Omega Alpha Equine. Happy Veterans Day!
United States Coast Guard!
Well, happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there. It's obviously Veterans Day here in the United States, and thank you to everybody who served our country and to all those who are still serving. And be sure to thank Chad for us when he gets out of bed today, if he's not already.
You know what? He actually gets the day off, so he is definitely sleeping late today.
Now, do they do anything on the base for Veterans Day? I'm assuming they do. They must.
Oh, I'm sure that they do. And you know, the way that Chad and my marriage works is he will tell me, oh, my God, babe, we got to get to the base in 30 minutes. You have to be dressed up in a complete ball gown, and you have to be totally looking good because we have to go to this thing that's in 30 minutes on base. Go! So if I do have to do something, that's all I'll find out.
Now, do the wives have to wear little insignias about what rank they are, like your captain's wife or a major's wife? Or do you get to wear little badges and pins, too? No?
No. You know, they try, I think, in the grand scheme of things, they try to keep the wives, you know, like, we don't have ranks, we're wives. But
I know, I'm
in
just
the
kidding.
Wives group, they definitely rank themselves.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, if you've read any of the books about military, I mean, in some of the most famous books, they talk about they would arrange themselves kind of in the order of ranking. I don't, you know, I don't even know what the ranks mean and stuff, so I don't really care. I just know my husband's awesome.
Well, we're gonna have Smokey Brandeman on a little bit later, who obviously is a veteran. I just posted his picture from when he served in the Coast Guard all those years ago, and I think we had him on last year. He's kind of the veteran that we have on to talk about that. We're going to have him on a little bit later in the show. So, but in the meantime, I saw that you were out over the weekend on Facebook. You were out feeding giraffes. So how did you get to go out and feed giraffes over the weekend?
I don't know. I woke up Saturday morning. Chad's like, what do you want to do today? And I said, I want to go to the zoo, like a little kid. So we actually, the World Wildlife Zoo, which is actually the world's largest privately owned zoo, is about 4 miles from my house. And it's really a great place. They do a lot of wildlife rehabilitation and, like, hawks that can't be released. They have so many birds, and it's almost like an animal sanctuary. And they have a giraffe feeding station, and they breed giraffes. I mean, giraffes are born there every year. They've actually had more live births at their zoo than any other zoo has individually. So it's a really great place, and they kind of propagate animals, and they keep random breeds going. You know, they have a lot of endangered animals there. So it's really a great place, and you can go and you can feed giraffes. So you climb up on this, it's almost like going up on somebody's porch, you know, and you climb, but you have to climb way up these stairs, and the giraffes walk right up to you, and they just take the food right out of your hand, and it's so fun. I love giraffes. They're my second favorite animal.
They have big, long tongues.
Yes, they do. Chad was not as excited to feed the giraffes as I was. He was like, okay, that's gross. I was like, you feed him one or I'm not leaving. So he did feed it. But, yeah, they, like, wrap their tongue around your hand. It's just a really, you know, when do you get to play with giraffes? Never. And so I did smooch the giraffe on the nose a couple times when I was trying to avoid the tongue. And I also kissed a little baby deer, and I don't know what it is about seeing little animals. You just want to kiss them right on the nose.
I think that's the mommy instinct coming out now.
No, that's a girl thing. That's a girl thing.
Dominique could be so proud. Dominique's going to be so proud when she hears this.
I know. I'm sure she would. They have zebras. I see the zebras, and actually, I think Dominique said she sent them some zebras at one point. So I was thinking, these are Dominique's zebras, and I said, if only, you know, Dominique, the problem with Dominique is that she can't figure out how to get me a giraffe. And I realized there are giraffes 4 miles away, and they have baby giraffes. So I could just get a baby giraffe, put it in the trailer, drive it 4 miles. That's it.
You're going to need a higher fence. I think you're going to have to raise it a few feet.
No, it's just their head, okay? The head's high. You can't jump. It'll be fine. That'll be fine. Electric fence. No problem.
Jennifer, what's coming up? Oh, wait, I don't have Jennifer. Let's see if we can
there
find
I
Jennifer.
Am.
Jennifer. Oh, there you are.
I'm
okay.
I'm sorry. I was busy laughing, so I had to put myself on mute. Welcome to today's Omega Alpha Monday edition. Interspersed among some wild news stories, we chat with Ray Ann LaPlante about her documentary project about Sable Island and its wild horses. And then next up, we have Ellie Phipps of Dunstan Winery, and she is going to stop by and tell us about her wild horse sanctuary at Montgomery Creek Ranch. And our favorite Civil War reenactor, horse trainer, and veteran Smoke Brandeman will be stopping by. And as Glenn mentioned, it is Veterans Day, which originated in 1921 as Armistice Day. And in 1954, it got changed to Veterans Day. Now, an interesting little piece here that I wasn't aware of, thank you very much, Google, on November 11th at 11:11, fighting ceased in World War II in 1918, and in keeping with this tradition, all work stops this day each year at 11:11. So everybody, make sure you put down your pencils and your pitchforks at 11:11.
And that would be just correct you there, it's World War One. That was our
Day.
And 11:11 was yesterday.
Yeah.
So the time.
Yes. But that's okay. We celebrate it today, which is actually Veterans Day was yesterday. But we celebrate it today so that all the federal workers can have off, like your husband.
Exactly.
Well, my Daily Whinny actually goes out to a veteran by the name of Aaron Heliker. He did 6 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan and more than 70 combat missions. Well, unfortunately, on that 70th combat mission, he was severely wounded by a roadside bomb and really physically and mentally scarred. He was deemed medically unfit and got basically fired. They let him go from the only job he ever had or ever wanted. They said neither therapy or heavy doses of medication that they gave him for post-traumatic stress disorder worked, and he bounced from one treatment center to another. He went through a divorce, and he cut himself off from his family. It was a really sad, sad story. It was only a matter of time before he was thinking about committing suicide. Unfortunately, that is a problem that we see with a lot of veterans, but there came a turning point in the summer of 2011, and that was when he signed up with Debbie Fisher's Rainer Therapeutic Riding Program in Yelm, Washington. It's a 9-week course that matches wounded soldiers with their horses. And he found a horse by the name of Fred, which is a Frederiksborg gelding, which is a rare breed rare Danish breed, apparently a Danish royalty breed. And he apparently has done very well with Fred. He has become the biggest and most prominent success story that this program has. And he was highlighted in the Seattle Times in May and picked up by the Associated Press and ran in papers throughout the country. He is now competing in what's called mountain trail horse riding. And on Saturday, he wore one of the belt buckles he won that day. And he said he cherishes that belt buckle more than his 38 commendations he won while in the Air Force. And this is his quote: "Horses really do heal us. I can't explain it. It's like asking, how does God help people? Maybe it's because he ain't pressuring me to talk about my friends who died or what it feels like to get shot. I don't know, but I know he saved my life." So this goes out to Fred and Aaron. They get my Daily Whinny today on Veterans Day. These programs really, really do work. All right, Jamie, your turn.
Well, being that it is Veterans Day, I've got to give my Daily Whinny to the only animal ever to hold rank in any military service, and that is, of course, Sergeant Reckless, the Mongolian mare who carried ammunition for the U.S. troops during the Korean War. And back in the 50s, from what I've read, they say she was as famous as Lassie and Rin Tin Tin, going onto television shows. She went on to the Art Linkletter show. Her appearance because of weather was canceled on the Ed Sullivan show. They had planned a film for her, and it never actually happened. Well, I think it's time. And Jennifer, did you say that you heard a film that is potentially going to come out about Reckless?
Yeah, she's taking a call right now. But, yeah, I think she read that they're working on the – it's preliminary yet. I don't think they've started to film it, but they're working on the script for one.
How difficult must that be, I mean, to do a film like that? Well, I guess they did War Horse, which
– yeah.
Just apparently Reckless was so amazing because she would stand next to the heavy artillery guns. I mean, the cannons that would blast off, and people that know her and loved her and fought with her say she never twitched. She never moved a muscle, never spooked, never anything, knew her job. And just to think that a horse can go in there and do that, that's why she gets my Daily Whinny. Happy Veterans Day, Reckless.
Very good. And I do see that Zenyatta's half-sister is out and about.
How dare you steal my story? Are you crazy?
I was leading you into the story.
Oh, okay, sure. You weren't supposed to know about it. So, yes, our dear friend Zenyatta's half-sister is, and this is half-sister, was born from her dam. So it's Ebusante is the horse's name.
Ebusante.
I'm Facebook friends with her, Glenn. We go way back, okay?
Oh.
Anyway, she's 3 years old, and she is which is bizarre, she's a daughter of Bernardini, which is the baby daddy of Zenyatta's first baby. Who can keep up with this? I swear they need to do a soap opera on racehorse breeding, because Ebusante, which is the daughter of Zenyatta, is also half related to her baby daddy. Oh, my God. I can't keep up. Anyway,
is that
Zenyatta's
incestuous,
mom,
by the way? Just
I don't
asking.
Know. Is that weird? So her husband is her brother-in-law at the I can't keep up with it. Anyway, Zenyatta's mom had this baby out of Bernardini, Ebusante, and she is running her first ever race at Hollywood Park on November 16th. So we just want to wish her the best of luck. She's actually been running very, very well in works and everything. 5 furlongs, she ran in under a minute at Hollywood Park. And so she is going in the fourth race at Hollywood Park on the 16th for a $45,000 maiden special weight, all for fillies, all carrying 121 pounds. It's going to be 2:02 Pacific Standard Time. Set your
now,
ADR, people.
If she does well, will she be too old to qualify for the Kentucky Derby or not? Do we know?
Yes. She is 3 years old, so 3 years old was this past spring as well, Glenn. Bless your heart.
Okay, just check it.
Because she'll be four for the next one. And that's what I really like about them is they don't run, you know, like Zenyatta didn't start running till the end of her three-year-old career as well.
Yeah.
So
very
they
good.
Wait.
Well, good luck to, I wish it had an easier name to say, though.
Ebusante.
Thank
I'm guessing,
thank
by
you.
The way.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm not sure that's right. We'll go with that for now until somebody corrects us, and I'm sure somebody will. Hey, we have our first guest on the line here today. We have Ray Ann with us, who is a video journalist. She's a horse girl, and she's a master control operator for a TV station. And she's doing an independent documentary about a place that I knew nothing about, and that's why we wanted to have her on, was to learn more about this. She also has a Kickstarter project going. We're going to find out about that as well. So good morning, Rayanne.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you on. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Now, you grew up a horse girl, right?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in Parksville on Vancouver Island in British Columbia.
Okay, Canada?
Yeah. So I'm a Canadian. And yeah, so I just grew up around horses. I have a beautiful quarter horse right now, and he just absolutely means the world to me, so it's definitely in my blood.
Well, you have a quarter horse named Scout, which is which has to be one of the top 10 most popular quarter horse names ever, especially for a paint.
Yeah, I didn't name him.
He came with that.
Mhm.
Well, now, tell us about your documentary and what you're working on. I know nothing about this place, Sable Island.
You know nothing?
No.
So Sable Island is basically this small, tiny sandbar located off the coast of Nova Scotia, and it's home to about, last I heard, there's about 500 wild horses on this island. And they're descendants from horses in the late 1700s, so they've been there for quite a while. And it's really unique. They're one of the only wild horse populations that's completely unmanaged by people. So they receive no interference at all. They just live and die on the island wild and free. And I believe they're the only protected wild horses in Canada as well. So there's certainly a lot of history and a lot of uniqueness about this wild horse population.
So it isn't like, you know, our Chincoteague Island where they actually call the herd every once in a while. And this is a non-tourist island. You have to have permission to go there or not.
Yes. So yeah. I've been given permission. You have to apply to the Canadian Coast Guard. So I had to coordinate with them. And about 50 to 100 people actually get to go to the island yearly. And a lot of that is just for research purposes. So they make it restricted just because the island does have such a fragile ecosystem that if they did have a lot of tourism, it would damage the island too much. And they do want to keep the horses as wild as possible. And, yeah, they don't receive any food in the wintertime. They do not get removed from the island. They've been protected by law since the 1960s. So they receive absolutely no treatment. And on this island as well, they have no predators. So someone was trying to describe it to me who had been to Sable Island before. I've personally never been to Sable Island. But the horses have kind of this unique kindness about them because they haven't learned to be scared kind of like other horses. Like they have their natural instincts, of course, but they've never had to be scared of a bear or something like that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And you know, this has to be one of the very few places in the world where wild horses are truly undisturbed. Mm-hmm. I don't know of too many others where they don't get disturbed at all. Now, you want to do a documentary about this. What led you to want to do that?
It started very randomly, I guess. I was talking to one of my coworkers, and we were talking about what we want to do with our lives. And he asked me what my dream was, and immediately I said to do a documentary on Sable Island, just because I'm a huge horse lover, and I've always just imagined growing up as a kid this magical island with all these wild horses on it. So that's what first led me to the island. And then I remember him telling me, he's like, okay, for your first project, start with something a little smaller. And I went home that night. I'm like, no, like, go big or go home kind of thing. So I researched it, and I got permission last year to visit Sable Island. And I thought, wow, like, if I got permission, I want to go do this. And through my research about Sable Island, I've just discovered just the beautiful history of it, and just everything about the island is so unique. And I think wherever you are in the world that you can benefit from learning about this place.
Now, how, you know, you said you got permission to go there. Will, obviously, they'll allow you to film if you're going to be doing the documentary. How long will you actually be on the island to get enough footage to do it?
I'll be on the island for about 2 to 3 weeks. And then I will be in Halifax, like on the mainland, for another few. And usually the island is restricted to day trips mostly. But I've been fortunate enough that I can stay longer due to the expense of going to the island and actually staying on the island. And this is also a side project, just kind of a passion project of mine. That I won't be going for too long of a time, but long enough that I can create something amazing with it. So, yeah.
Well, that's terrific. And I see here that you have a Kickstarter project for this, and we keep an eye on the Kickstarter projects that involve horses, and we've highlighted a few on the show here, and well, we think it's a neat cause. And you are so close. You have 4 days to go. Your goal was $15,000 to be able to put this documentary together, and you just went over $13,000. You have less than $2,000 to go.
I know. It's just teasing me. I look at it probably like every 10 minutes. I'm like, ah, come on.
You know, so, I've been wondering about that with Kickstarter projects, if you're constantly on there hitting the refresh button every 5 minutes all day long.
Yeah, you are. And Kickstarter tells you all the stats of, like, how many people watched your video, how many people like it, how many, like, it gives you everything. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, there's 1,000-something people that have seen it. Why haven't you all donated? Like, so I've never actually fundraised before, and I'm very, even if I'm, like, in financial trouble, I will not ask my closest friend or family member for money. I'm not just, that's not how I do it. I tough it out. So fundraising and just being vulnerable and just showing people my dream and asking them to support it is definitely stepping out of my comfort level, and yeah, it's been certainly interesting to do.
Well, for those that are new to the show or haven't heard us talk about it before, Kickstarter is actually a website where people can go to, no matter what it is, whether you want to develop a product or a service or a documentary or a film, or it's a place where you can go to raise money, and how you raise money is just by asking people like us to go in there and pledge $5, $15, $100, and for those different pledges, the Kickstarter people like Rayanne say, we're going to give you this for your, we're going to give you whatever for your pledge. So in your case, I'm looking at a pledge of $50. You get the DVD or Blu-ray disc of your Sable Island project, and you also get to buy extra things and gifts and you know, at a discount. So there are those kinds of levels that you'll see right there on her page, and Jennifer will post a link to it on our Facebook page as well. I wish, and there's a video on there that everybody should go and watch, because it really does explain what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone go watch and donate.
That's terrific. Good luck with it. I wish you the best of luck, Rayanne, and we hope to see more about the Sable Island horses soon.
Thank you so much.
You know, there are some, I looked on there today, Jamie, and there are 600 projects that are closing soon just on people wanting to make films and documentaries. Kickstarter has just taken off since we first highlighted the one, a year ago.
Is Kickstarter the one, Kickstarter is the one that Templeton Thompson fundraised for her album, correct?
Right. Yep, and that was when it first started, a year ago, maybe, or half a year ago. It had just started, and it has grown. I mean, it's huge now.
Yeah, I wonder exactly how much you have to give back to Kickstarter. Do you know?
I don't know exactly how much you have to give back. I had never researched it that well. I know they must take something, or they wouldn't be in business. But, you know, people have done it and have successfully brought products to the market, and techie things and non-techie things. You know, it's apparently worked.
Well, what the heck? Let's figure out a way to fundraise for this show.
Nobody likes us that much, Jamie.
If you like us, give us $20. Just $20.
Yeah, what can we give in return?
Feed us.
Aha.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right.
It'll feed us for 12 days. Just kidding. That would be wrong.
$15 will buy 3 new microphone covers.
That's right. That's right.
Going for the basics right now. It's just food and water. $30, we got shelter.
Well, there is somebody helping to support us, but that's Omega Alpha. Why don't you tell us about them?
Well, of course, we all care about what we feed our horses, and, you know, it's obviously probably more than what we feed ourselves, and Omega Alpha cares about what goes into your horses and ponies, and that's why they only use natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. Now, recently, I've got a couple emails from our listeners about asking what type of product I had for Jet when he was going through all of his stomach distress when he was first getting back into training. And I know that Robin's had some trouble with her horse being sick, and she was curious about ulcer meds. Well, Robin, you know, if I can just answer your question on here, the first thing I did was go to Omega Alpha and get Biotic 8. They have Biotic 8 just basically takes the flora of the gut and puts it all back together. It's like them eating, you know, yogurt. What is it, probiotics? But it has all the probiotics that is designed for your horse's stomach and hindgut. It's all in Biotic 8. So that is the first thing that I would do for a horse that is having any sort of digestive distress. My neighbor's horse, colics, just intermittently for no reason, just really doesn't like to drink. And I had her start on Biotic 8. I said, just go with Biotic 8. And they haven't had a colic episode. And that's what Jet was doing, just random colics in the middle of the day for no reason whatsoever. And I put him on Biotic 8 and all those stopped. Now, I don't know if it's going to be that successful for you, but that's how it worked with me. So that was the first line of defense. They also have Respi-Free, which is a treatment for breathing problems. They also have Airwaves, Lung Flush, Herbicough. So if you have any breathing problems at all, go to OmegaAlphaEquine.com. That's OmegaAlphaEquine.com. check out all of it. It's all non-testable, natural formulations, OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
Very good. Thank you, Jamie. Well, you know, I have a rescue story here before our next guest is ready. Or actually, let me say this. If you're looking for a job, let's be helpful here on this Monday morning. If you are looking for a job and you want a good job in the horse world, and who isn't, you know, in our audience always looking for a good horse job? Well, there's one available about 4 miles from our house here in Ocala, and that's at Live Oak. Live Oak is the home of Chester Weber, and apparently they're looking for a stable manager. And the ad reads like this: Live Oak Combined Driving, based in Ocala, Florida, seeking an experienced stable manager with exceptional organizational, business, and logistical skills. International and national travel necessary to fulfill the position. Must be proficient in managing a small staff, have great computer skills, and give the highest standard of equine care. Ideal candidate would have experience at managing a stable competing at the FEI championship level. And you're supposed to send your resume to manager@chesterweber.com. You know, I've heard through the grapevine that Chester is a good boss, and this Live Oak is the place we've talked about before, Jamie. That's 4,000 acres. It's 7 square miles of farm. It's huge. So it takes you 20 minutes. There's a road that goes all the way around his place. It takes you 20 minutes to drive the road around his farm. So that
dear
tells
God,
us something.
You got to have a big job managing. But what I would like to say is the first thing I did when you said Chester Weber was hiring is I go online. And the most important thing about getting a new job is he good looking? So I went on to Google Images, and he's cute. So obviously you can work for him. There you go.
Wendy posted it on the driving page today on Facebook and said, if you want a job with the best boss ever, Wendy knows him pretty well. Actually, Chester helped her get started in her career in four-hand driving competitions. So she owes that to Chester, and much of it to Chester. So if you're looking for a job, it's open right now. Jennifer, you'll have to go apply.
You should. Why not?
There we go. See you, Glenn. Imagine the show this month. Off to Germany.
Yeah, off to Germany.
Yeah,
he travels to Europe a lot.
It sounds like a good gig. And then imagine in your off time, like lunch breaks, you could take really awesome trail rides around there. It'd be great.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe he'd even let you bring Beaker over for some trail rides. Our next guest is ready.
All right. Well, you know, it is such an honor to have her on our show because I read this story to you guys a while ago, and I just said, Jennifer, you got to get her on the air because I want to talk to her so bad because she's my new hero. And her name is Ellie Phipps Price, and she owns Montgomery Creek Ranch, and she also owns some of my other favorite things, which is vineyards. But we'll get to that. Anyway, let's say good morning to Ellie. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, it is so nice to have you on the show because just to give everybody a brief overview, and we'll get more into it. Ellie is the one who rescued how many Mustangs? 115 Mustangs.
Well, actually, originally I rescued 170 in Nevada, and we placed some of them, and then we have located about 130 of them to Montgomery Creek Ranch. So
you have rescued horses and that Mustangs, wild Mustangs, and put them back, basically set them free again. Let's start at the beginning. Have you always been horse crazy? Where did you grow up? What's your story?
Yeah, well, I'm afraid I was, and probably like a lot of girls, I was horse crazy. I didn't have a horse of my own for a long time, but I did the hunter jumper thing in Southern California and on lesson horses and borrowed horses and all that. I did some fox hunting in Colorado. And then eventually, finally, as an adult, I got my own horse and competed in eventing, which was, I always loved horses. So it goes back a long way.
Southern California, you grew up riding horses. Now, a Southern California hunter jumper or a Southern California eventer, which eventing is what I like to do, does not really communicate with the Mustang welfare issue. How did that happen?
Well, and this is kind of an interesting thing because I find that, you know, growing up with horses, loving horses, riding horses all my life, you get very focused on performance and competing and the relationship you have with one horse or two horses or whatever you're working with, and it can become very focused that way. And I always thought of myself as someone who loved horses in general, but I didn't know about Mustangs. I didn't know about the wild horses. I didn't know there was really even an issue about them. Until I started to kind of see articles in the news. I saw an article in Vanity Fair magazine called Galloping Scared about 5 or 6 years ago, and which was really informative. And at the time I thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. These wild horses are being rounded up and removed from the range, and we're going to lose them from the Western landscape. But I thought, well, now everybody knows that, you know, this article in Vanity Fair and people talking about it, so I'm sure they'll be okay. And as I followed the story, I realized that they weren't okay. They were in jeopardy. And then there's a wonderful book also called Mustang by Deanne Stillman. And that's the history of these horses. And she calls them the horse we rode in on. And, you know, it kind of gives the whole background of where they came from and how they evolved on the continent and how they came to be now in 10 Western states. Wild horses on the range. So
they're so mired in our history, just as human beings, and coming to this country. I'm sorry, they were here before we were. You know, it's not like they were shipwrecked and they just landed here. They've been here for as long as anybody can remember, and the fact that they're having any sort of issues it just breaks your heart. Now, being somebody in your shoes, you were able to do something about it. Tell us about your Mustang.
Well, it started with learning about the issue a little bit, and then I adopted a Mustang from the Canyon City program in Colorado from the BLM, and I went through that process, and he's an amazing horse. I jump him now. He's fantastic. Was the first the first Mustang, the tip of the iceberg. And then from there, I started talking to people, advocates and people on the issue, and I found out about a herd of horses, actually two horses that had been combined up in Nevada. They were wild horses that had wandered off of their herd management area, and so they had lost their protected status. And this was 2 years ago, and they had come down onto a cattle ranch to find alfalfa and water, and the cattle ranch was shipping their cows in the spring and turning off the water, and so they notified Nevada to remove the horses. And they rounded up the horses and sent them all in one day to sale for disposal, or dispersal, I guess, was their word. And
Same thing.
Yeah, we knew at that moment that those 170 horses from the Tuano and Pilot Valley herd management areas, wild horses, you know, there was 18 mares with foals by their sides. All of the males, there were about 65 stallions. You know, these were true wild horses off the Nevada range. And the killer buyers were lined up in the parking lot. There were 5 big trucks, and they were ready to go to Mexico. And they were just going to buy them by the pound. And I partnered with an organization called Lifesavers, and I helped them. We bought the horses. We bought every single horse at the auction. It was 4 hours of bidding. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Do you remember the total that you paid? And you had people bidding against you for these horses that were killer buyers, so that probably just motivated you even more. Do you remember what the total number was for all these horses?
The total number was just over $30,000. We did bid for every single horse. As we got about halfway through, they started to bring them in groups of 5 and 10, and you're just watching the scales of it's listing the price per pound. And,
oh my God.
They bid against us, but they would only go up to about 170, 180 per horse, and then they would drop out. But they bid against us all the way. They were not happy we were there because they thought they were going to come in and buy the horses quickly, load the trucks, and drive straight to Mexico. Normally, they have to pick up horses a few at a time here, a few there, keep them until they have to have enough to ship to Canada or Mexico to take them to slaughter. But this way, they could just fill the trucks and go. And so we stopped that. There, it was an amazing day. Advocates and just people that supported our effort showed up with their trailers, with their stock trailers. We had about 40 trucks and trailers lined up, and everybody pitched in and took, you know, 3, 5, 10 horses in a trailer and drove them to a feedlot that we rented, and we moved the horses out onto a feedlot, separated the stallions from the mares, and got everybody organized and safe, and then we had to figure out what to do with them.
So... Were at the point where you had them all on the feedlot, were you like, well, we did it. Oh, crap, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Or did you kind of have an idea?
Pretty much. I mean, we celebrated in that we had saved them. There's no way that you look at those mares with their foals, or you see the families looking at each other over the fences, the stallions trying to get back over to their mares, and there's no way that you see those horses and you don't. I mean, we cried, and there was the press. You know, there was a little bit of press, and you know, people showed up and said that that's a great thing you've done. But we did wake up the next day and say, "Oh boy, now what are we going to do?" And now we've got to find a place to put them. And you know, it was easy to place the babies. People wanted to adopt the babies mostly, and some of the younger horses that we were able to work with them, but the horses that had been wild for, you know, 5 or 10 years, very difficult to work with. And, you know, we were worried about where they would end up if they ended up in the wrong hands. So we knew we had to find a place for them where they could move around, you know, have room to move.
Of course. Now, so, I mean, horses, these horses that went off their range, you know, they don't understand boundaries. They're, it's not like they're like, oh, guys, don't stop, don't go any further. You're gonna get, you know, in trouble. You got to stay back here. So you've got to find a huge fenced area for 100+ Mustangs that are used to roaming free, that have fallen into incredibly hard times. You've just rescued from the killers. They're sitting in feedlots. What did you do at that point?
Well, for a year and a half, we fed them, almost 2 years, we fed them hay, which is very expensive. They, you know, we gelded all of the stallions because we realized that managing stallions was going to be a really difficult issue, and we didn't need a breeding herd. We got a chute and hired people that knew, mostly ex-BLM employees, because this is what the BLM does, is round up wild horses and remove them from the range. We, you know, hired people to trim their feet and, you know, squeeze chutes where you tilt the horse over in a table and, you know, they're tied up and you sand their feet off, basically. So we did all the things that the BLM does, run them through chutes, vaccinate them, you know, all that, feed them hay, and they're standing around. And so I started the search for a place where I could keep them, put them back together again. You know, and eventually my search led me back to California, and I found a cattle ranch, a very beautiful ranch, where they had fantastic perimeter fencing because they had planned to have buffalo there. So they had really good fencing, which is key. You know, just regular barbed wire, you know, wild horses aren't very impressed with that. So
no.
We had had great perimeter fencing and good water and good grazing, and you know, fortunately, I was able to buy that ranch, and we're creating a wildlife refuge and a horse sanctuary. And it's a big project. And it's not, you know, this isn't a practical solution to taking care of wild horses on the range because, you know, there are almost 30,000 wild horses on 300 million acres that are public land and managed by the BLM. And they're taking off 10,000 horses a year. And those horses are going into holding, long-term government holding, where they're basically getting fed hay. And, you know, right now we have 50,000 wild horses in long-term holding. They used to be wild, and now they're in holding. And there's really just, I mean, there's not relatively that many left. And so this is not, yeah, it's heartbreaking. And to see them rounded up and their families torn apart and to see them lose their place is heartbreaking. So, you know, Jamie, I'm just really so glad that you, you know, care about this. And I'm really hoping that, you know, other people that care about horses will get more aware of what's happening to them and, you know, find their voice to speak up for the horses. So
what can a normal, average, everyday, say we have so many listeners, like, say, in New England right now, what can they do to help? What can just the regular person do that's listening to help?
I think two things would be just so valuable. One is to just find out about, get educated a little bit by checking out a website of an organization, say, wildhorsepreservation.org, which is a coalition of about 75 different wild horse organizations, the Cloud Foundation, Madeline Pickens Organization, and many others are members of that wild horse preservation campaign. Or they could go to stoptheroundups.com. Basically gets you to the same kind of information. And from there, there's opportunities for advocacy where you can write your congressman, call your senator. You know, basically we have to show that we are not happy with how they're being managed and look for reform in their management. And you know, there's definite plans out there for better ways to do it so that we don't have to round them up.
Great. Well, so you've mentioned Madeline Pickens, and we've had her on the show. We did like an hour-long show with her, actually. Are you guys friends? Has she been to your place? Has she seen the horses? Have you been to her place? You know, how does this – you guys are just absolute pioneers and horse saviors. Wild Horse Annie would be so proud of you guys, you know. So are you guys friends? Do you get together? Do you talk about your Mustangs?
Yeah, we do. We have we're very – you know, I think there's – of the wild horse advocates, there's a lot of wild horse Annies out there right now, new ones, and Madeline definitely has had a great, strong voice for the horses. I admire her very much, and I do know her. I've met with her, and I haven't been to her place in Nevada, and she hasn't been to, but I have met with her several times, and I know her. She's great. I think, you know, to raise awareness about them, people didn't know what was happening, and 50% of wild horses are in Nevada. And so that's pretty much ground zero is Nevada right now. They're having a very difficult time there. The economy is tough. The ranching community is, you know, wants to have grazing for their cattle, and they see wild horses as competition for that grazing. And there's a war on the range. And to find a way to manage these horses' population, maybe with birth control is personally what I think is, you know, a very good solution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, darting the mares with birth control, it's like a vaccine, would cut down on population growth and allow them to basically have humane management. So that's what we're looking for. And those websites that I mentioned, stoptheroundups.com or wildhorsepreservation.org, are both, like, great places to find out, you know, what's happening with them. So...
Well, I totally agree. Now, I would like you to know that I do end every show by saying spay, neuter, and geld. And now I'm going to say spay, neuter, geld, and dart.
And dart.
Dart.
Right. Hey.
I love it. Well, let's talk real quick. We've got to let you plug, not that you need to plug it, but you've got a winery that Dunstan Wines is your vineyard or winery. I'm not quite sure what it's called. I just like to drink. So tell us a little bit about Dunstan Wineries.
Hey, a note to self. I'm writing, send wine to Jamie. Okay, good. Got that.
It keeps Jamie.
Yeah. Okay. Glenn, too. We have a vineyard in Sonoma. The name of the vineyard is Durrell. And we've had this vineyard for quite a while. It's a really established, known, wonderful vineyard. And I, you know, sometimes I for sure use the vineyard to attract attention to the horse issue. But they're both passions of mine. And we do a Chardonnay and a Pinot Noir. And the winery is Dunstan, which is named after my first Mustang. So it has, and there's a horseshoe on the label. You know, that's the connection there. We have some of the babies from the original rescue are at my ranch in Sonoma. So people that come to the winery like to see see wild horses, and so that kind of makes the connection for people, lets me get my story out about the horses. So it's good.
All right.
And you're
in
Napa.
Family in that area. I'm coming to your winery next time I go up to Sebastopol and Fairfield to visit my husband's grandparents.
Oh, perfect. We
tour around there all the time, so we will definitely come by. And everybody, only buy Dunstan wines from now on. Got it?
Oh, boy, you're the best. Such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you. And thank you for helping to raise awareness about the horses. It's so important, and, you know, now more than ever, they need us to speak up. So anything, you know, if horse people can get behind these horses, that would be the best thing, the best thing.
Well, Ellie, I didn't do anything but let you tell your story and what you've done, and you've worked incredibly hard on saving these horses. And I just, if I could reach through here and give you a big hug and say thanks for that, I would. You know, you guys, we're going to post all these links to all these websites on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. So check it out. Become involved. You know, get involved. Do whatever you can, because it is a big problem, and we just can't thank people like you, Ellie, for getting in there and creating Montgomery Creek Ranch, a place for these guys to go.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much. So much. It's such a pleasure. Glenn, thank you to you, too, and look forward to following your show and this story. So thank you.
Oh, thanks. Thank you, and have a great day. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Is it too early to start drinking? Is it 5 o'clock somewhere?
Oh, my God.
I was just looking at the wines here on the website. It's making me thirsty.
I just love, I just love powerful women that take initiative and just get stuff done, like her and Madeline Pickens. You know, they're just such great examples for all of us everywhere who, you know, we may not have the means to do what she does, but we have the passion, so we can try, you know, to help her and to help people like her and go to these websites and get involved. I just can't say enough. What an awesome, awesome woman.
Very good. Thank you, Ellie. You know, it's that time of
And wine. It's like the total package.
I was just going to say it's that time of year again, and you could give wine, or you can start planning another perfect gift for a special someone. And it's a gift that lasts for many, many years, probably a little longer than a bottle of wine, at least in our house or Jamie's. And that is a beautiful custom sign from EasySignsOnline.com. If you visit EasySignsOnline.com/holiday today and take advantage of a special 15% discount coupon only for Horse Radio Network listeners or your friends, Easy Signs Online has a unique website design that allows you to choose all of your sign options and see complete pricing every step of the way. From horse farm signs, carved signs, stall nameplates, vinyl banners, business and church signs, winery signs, they have what you need for the holiday gift-giving season. You can combine this 15% off coupon with their current free shipping promotion for a deal that's hard to pass up. And the code, when you check out in the code area, in the coupon code area, is HRN12. Horse Radio Network, HRN12. You get your 15% off coupon today by visiting EasySignsOnline.com/holiday. But hurry on over. This deal will not last long. And I want to thank all the listeners who have bought signs. I've been told that there have been a number that have ordered for the holidays already. And, you know, you're going to give a very special gift. So check it out today. Well, we're talking about wild horses and things like that today, and I thought Jared Rogerson would be the one to go to because he spends a lot of time out in the wild with his job, and he has a song about that called Above the Timberline. So if you don't mind, Jamie, let's hear a little Jared Rogerson.
Bring it.
City offers you convenience, and this old mountain offers you no lenience, but it's the life I choose to lead. Peace of mind's what I receive. I make my home above the timberline. In my saddlebags, who knows what you'll find. On my trusty steed, I've got everything I need. Up here on the Great Divide, I went to college searching for my way. Textbooks for rodeo seemed a pretty even trade. Well, I guess fate can handle each and every day. Wouldn't have it any other way. Now I make my home above the timberline. In my saddlebags, who knows what you'll find. On my trusty steed, I've got everything I need. Up here on the Great Divide, there's bighorn sheep. Look, there's an eagle flying down there. We got fish to eat, and up here there ain't no bear. It's the place that I reside, up above the timberline. Fate's in charge of every day. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, that was Jared Rogerson, Above the Timberline. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen. And this show today is sponsored by OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Well, we are loaded with guests today, and our next guest is a regular friend of the show, joins us here on occasion, and I think we had him on actually last Veterans Day, and we're so excited that he could join us again today, and that's horse trainer and good friend of the Horse Radio Network, Smokey Branham. Good morning, Smokey.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you? Hi, Jamie.
Sure. Terrific. We're so glad to have you back, and happy Veterans Day, and thank you for your service. I say that every year, but I'm going to say it again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and happy Veterans Day to all my brothers and sisters in arms out there, too.
Well, you know, you posted on our Facebook page, and I reposted today because I couldn't resist, a picture of you while you were in the Coast Guard. Was that? I'm going to age you
now. That was 1996, my last duty station up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And I was the command senior chief up there for 4 years before I retired.
I noticed a lot of stripes, so I figured that meant something important.
Yeah, you get those for every 4 years of service. So I was in for 23 years and 6 months and 14 days and some hours, but wasn't counting.
But, yeah, you're not counting.
Right.
So, now, what does Veterans Day mean to veterans? Is it, you know, what does it actually mean to veterans? How do they feel about it?
Well, I think, you know, for most of the veterans, I think it's a holiday where they can be recognized for the service that they perform for the country and you know, feel good about what they did and how they served and made a contribution to the country. I think that's how most veterans feel about it. But, you know, most of them, too, aren't really seeking the recognition, but it's nice to get a pat on the back just like anybody else, you know.
Well, it is nice to be remembered for the, you know, really the sacrifice that you put in. Sometimes we forget about, too, and you know, Jamie obviously is married to an Air Force guy, and one of the things we forget about sometimes too is how their service. You know, I gave my daily Winnie to a guy who's out your way actually. His name is Aaron Heliker. He did 6 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan and 70 combat missions. we forget, too, that, you know, he had a family at home. He had a wife at home who, during six tours of duty, which probably amounted to about 6 years, he wasn't home. So it's very tough on the families, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. They serve right along with the guy or the gal that's actually in the military. You know, they're having to keep the home fires burning and raise the kids and pay the bills and deal with the loss of their spouse or significant other. And, you know, it's tough on them as well. And my commending goes out to them, too.
Give a shout-out to my brother-in-law, Dan, Jennifer's brother, who served in for 25, 26 years. He was actually the oldest Green Beret when he retired at the age of 44. Still actively serving in the Green Berets. And you know, Smokey, why he quit was partly because his knees gave out from all the jumps he did, from all the parachuting.
I can relate. I can relate. Mine are toast from all the pounding I got on the waves out in the ocean.
I bet.
When it starts getting cold like today.
So how much time actually in the Coast Guard did you spend on boats?
Oh, about half of my 20 years was on either small boats or ships. So it's a seagoing service. A lot of people don't understand that the Coast Guard is out there in the big blue water just like the Navy is.
Right.
We think of
Coast Guard as just helicopters, you know, but they're out there in the ships as well. Now, tell me too, what's new with you? What's going on with the horses?
Well, we've been working a few colts again this summer and doing a few clinics and whatnot. And I've been getting kind of involved in an organization called Inner City Slickers, which is a horse or an equine based program for underprivileged kids and kids that might need some support and some propping up and letting them know there are folks out there that'll help them and, you know, get them back in school and on the right track. And so we've been doing quite a lot of work with those guys this summer and trying to get them set up to where we can get some events going up here in Wisconsin too. So,
well, that's terrific.
That's kind of the road I took this year.
Well, it's a terrific organization. We had him on the Stable Scoop show to talk about Inner City Slickers and you know what they're doing, and you can find him on Facebook too under Inner City Slickers, and you know they are really making headway, and some of the pictures they post are just precious.
Yep, they are. It's a great organization, and they're doing a great job of getting the word out and getting things set up across country. And if any of your listeners want a good cause to volunteer for, that's a good one.
And it's run by a guy by the name of Michael McNeil, who was the drummer for Three Dog Night, was it?
Yep.
Trying
to
remember. Yeah, yep, that's right. Way back, he was the drummer for a number of years for them, and what a neat guy, and he just wanted to do something good, and he's a horse guy. So they have this day or two program that they put together to go around to all these cities and help build confidence and, you know, build self-esteem amongst these kids who have none because of their circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I went down to Iowa this summer for an event they had down there to get familiar with the program and meet Michael and Cindy, one of his directors. And I'll tell you, we just had a great time working with those kids, and it's amazing to see the transformation of these kids from when they come in the morning and they're pretty distrustful and standoffish and not really wanting to get involved with it. And then, you know, by the end of the day, these kids are riding horses around and laughing and having a good time. And it's really amazing what this program does for these kids.
Well, that's terrific. And, Smokey, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Well, they can jump on my website at smokeybrandeman.com, or they can find me on Facebook, or just Google Buck Brandeman's brother. They'll find me.
Do you actually show up when people do Google that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah?
Okay, I'm going to try that right now.
It'll come up.
I'm going to try
that right now.
Yeah, by the way, congratulations, Jamie, on that little airman you got in the hangar there.
Thank you. You know what is amazing, Smokey, is that
we posted the ultrasound. And as a horse girl, I've been going around saying I'm in foal. You know, I'm in foal. I like the airman in the hangar thing. I said I'm in foal.
Yeah.
We posted that on Facebook, and everybody thought it was a dang ultrasound of a horse. I'm like,
yeah, I was looking at that this morning. Vicky told me about it this morning that you had it up there, and everybody thought it was a real filly. Of course, it might be a filly. You never know.
I felt so bad for Jamie after about 50 comments saying congratulations on your new foal, meaning a horse, that I posted on there. It really meant Jamie is pregnant. This is a baby. And even after that, people were posting. It was like, oh, God.
They're going to be awful disappointed in about 7 months when there's actually a human baby and not a horse baby.
Yeah, well. As long as you're happy, that's all that matters, right?
I have
to
tell you, Jamie, we had 360 people like that and about 60 comments. It's one of the most liked and commented things we've had in a couple of weeks. So
it's all crazy people, though.
Horse, baby. Either way, people are happy for you.
Yeah, exactly. Horse or kid, don't matter. They're happy.
Yep, there you go.
Well, thank you, Smokey. The airman in the hangar, I'm going to write that down. Chad will appreciate
there
that.
There you go. Well, it's Veterans Day. You got to keep with the theme, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Smokey, before we let you go, are you doing any clinics anytime soon, or do we just need to come to you?
No, this winter, you know, I don't do a whole lot in the wintertime. I kind of work a couple colts because I don't have a lot of facilities to work out of, but we'll be getting our clinic list up here in the next month or so and get ready for spring. Probably the first one will be around April at the Midwest Horse Fair, and then we'll go from there.
All right, we'll come out to Phoenix. Put that on
all
the
right, list. We'll try. We'll try and do that.
All right. Thank you, Smokey.
Right, thank you.
You,
thank
as
you,
always,
Smokey.
Awesome to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on again. It's a great time with you guys always.
And, of course, you can find more about Smokey at SmokeyBranneman.com is his website, SmokeyBranneman.com, or just look for Smokey Branneman on Facebook. And, again, happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there. We appreciate your service. Well, let's do some news here. We have some news from the weekend. You want to lead the way?
Wait. I just wanted to remember last week on Friday, I had to make some rules for my farm. And
rules. I forgot about the rules.
A brief short list. I promised everybody I would read them.
Now, why did you make rules?
Every one of these rules was born out of necessity. You know, you when you start a business or you start a farm, you don't really know what's going to pop up until you actually have it happen. So then I had to make rules. You know, obviously, one of the most frustrating things is people not showing up. And when you call and you tell me you're going to be here, you know, or they have a time scheduled every week and then they just miss one, that's really frustrating to me. And I didn't quite know how to, because I've never made rules before, I didn't know how to say, oh, well, you owe me for that one. You know, I'm really not good at asking for money and stuff like that. So I don't even deal with the money. I have a box everybody just puts their checks into when I teach them a lesson. I'm like, don't give it to me. I don't want it. I'll lose it. I'll wash it. Whatever. I'll launder it. Don't come out of my pocket. Put it in the box. So that's been a frustrating thing. So I had to make, like, policies. And number one, obviously, a helmet is mandatory every time you ride a horse. You are encouraged to get one, but if not, one will be provided for you. And I have been collecting helmets for, you know, anytime I saw one that was for sale that was cheap, you know, like a used helmet, I buy it. So I've got a good collection of kids' helmets in there for everybody to use. Number two, cancellation policy. Lessons must be canceled 4 hours before lesson time or you will be charged for that lesson. And I think that's generous. What do you think, 4 hours?
Yeah. No, I think that's about right.
24 hours
is tough
because what'd you say?
Yeah. Well, we used to say, the day before, Jennifer, notify us the day ahead. Yeah.
24 hours.
We used to, because you know what,
nice.
Jamie? I know, but you can't, if you think about it from a business point of view, can I jump in here? If you think about it from a business point of view, you can't reschedule anything with 4-hour notice. You have blocked that time off. So you've got that hour or two that you're not going to do anything productive and make any money. If they contact you a day ahead, you have a chance of putting something else in there. So from a business point of view, you're better off having the 24 hours.
Yeah, I know. You got to start somewhere, I guess. And my thought was like, okay, the kid's at school and he goes home sick. And I don't want your sick child out here. So keep your sick child at home. And as long as you let me know within 4 hours, we're good. Number three, due to the high prices of hay and, well, everything, lesson prices now will be slightly increased. So I'm upping my prices for the first time in 4 years. I'm not doing it for free. Wait, I kind of am. They're pretty cheap. Number four.
Before you go on, let me do another piece of helpful advice here. The only reason I'm offering these is we've made all these mistakes. We had a big farm. We've run businesses over the years, and one of the mistakes that a lot of businesses make, and I'm not just pointing you out here, is that they will wait 4 or 5 years before raising prices. It's always, always, always better to raise your prices every year a little bit. Otherwise, after 4 years, you're going to have to raise them a lot more than people are comfortable with. If you give them little increments, they'll stick with you and they're not going to quit. It's the same, same thing that your ice cream does and the gasoline and the, everything that you buy raises a little bit at a time. That way it's not so noticeable. We need to do that same thing in the horse world. Otherwise, you are waiting 4 years. You're going to have to raise them more than you want to. And then it really stands out to people. So just help.
Well, yeah, I did. The reason I kind of raised the prices too was I started looking around at the neighborhood and who's charging what, and I stayed current with everybody. I actually raised mine to the level of the Western place down the street. And she and I do a lot of business back and forth where people that want to write English, she sends to me and vice versa. So it works out well, and I just kind of made my prices after hers. I had to raise mine like $5 a lesson, so it wasn't a big deal.
Okay.
Number four is the rule number one when riding is no screaming. You don't know how many little girls get on a dang horse and you start walking the horse forward and they're like, "Wah!" and they scream and then they spook the horse. So rule number one goes with rule number two, which is no whining. I don't want to hear any whining. So no screaming, no whining when you're sitting on a horse. I don't respond to that. It's completely unallowed.
Jennifer, I can't take lessons with Jamie. Remind me of that.
No, ever. Not
no,
ever.
No, I can't do that.
Are you a screamer, Glenn? Are you a screamer?
No, just kidding.
I don't want to know anymore. Number five is, some of this is stuff for the little kids, and never say I can't. Always say I will try, because you'll say, okay, let's try. I can't do that. Just reach up and touch his ears. I can't. I'll try. So erase I can't from your vocabulary. We like to be positive here at Flyover Farm. Number six, treats for the lesson horses after lessons are encouraged. Give them treats. Bring them cookies. Bring them cake. Whatever you want to bring them. Just don't feed them in the cross size, because then they become naughty and they start to paw. So don't feed them treats. And finally, number seven. Only seven rules here at Flyover Farm. And this was born out of necessity. Believe it or not, this actually happened. And it happened for 5 hours. If your parents forget to pick you up after a lesson, seriously, the child didn't leave till 9:30. Her lesson was at 3. Keep this in mind.
Oh, the memories.
If your parents forget to pick you up, you will be given a double espresso and a manure fork and sent out into the pasture.
Actually, it's the parent that should be sent out of the pasture with the manure fork, I think.
Yeah, but give a kid a double espresso, they won't sleep for days. So there you go. Those are the rules of Flyover Farm. Questions or comments, let me know. But, yes.
Well, they're actually mild.
You up,
you're a lot nicer than Jennifer was. I can tell you that. Jennifer was much tougher than that.
Really? What was your rule, Jennifer?
She was tougher than that.
I think no whining was probably my top rule, and mine didn't apply to just sitting on the horse. My no whining rule applied the minute your sneaker laden feet touch the ground at my farm. There will be no whining.
Yeah,
we did a lot of boarding too, so we had to throw the boarders in with the lesson kids and adults. And one of the things that we ran into all the time, more so with the boarding side, I think, was the whiners. And then one of the rules that we had that's not on your list is we would occasionally get those people in, you know, that when you interview them about boarding, you know how this goes. When you interview them about boarding, they're all nice and sweet, and you think, this is going to be the best boarder ever. And after a week, right. You realize this was a huge mistake. And one of the things was yelling. If anybody, we had this mother and daughter who used to yell at each other in the barn. And finally, we warned them several times and then kicked them out. We just said, you have to take your horse today, because yelling in the barn is not allowed. It's just not allowed. No. You know,
one of the hard and fast rules was you're not allowed to change my radio station.
That's the other one. And Jennifer listens to some pretty wacky music. So,
you know what? I'm sure you do, Jennifer, but I had the same problem. If I can't, I'm sorry. When I'm outside and I'm messing around with the horses, I like to listen to country music. And these dang teenagers come over and they pop on whatever Beyonce just stupid Lady Gaga crap is on the radio on the top 40 station. It makes me nuts. So I'm going to put that in. Y'all are going to make me make more rules. Number 8. Don't change my radio.
I used to love it if we were gone for the weekend or gone for the day or something, and the junior staff was in charge of taking care of things. The really smart ones knew that before they left for the end of the day, they had to change the radio station back. Because if I came into the barn when I came home and discovered that they had changed it, there would be, you know what to say.
I'm sure. Now, I also like the no screaming. I can't imagine anybody standing there screaming at each other in public. Especially a mother-daughter?
This particular pair they were just screamers at home, obviously, and didn't see any reason why they shouldn't. But, you know, the barn is supposed to be the quiet, peaceful, happy place. And that was one of the things that Jennifer insisted on. This is the happy place. If you're not happy, go somewhere else, because, you know, this was supposed to be the happy place. And we were like you. We had a big stable. It was probably 20, 25 horses. And it was, you know, the house was right at the barn. So we lived there. So, it's even tougher when you live there and it gets to be drama. And, you know, any barn has drama. I understand that. But, you can sure try and limit that drama.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I would not be afraid to remove people. I did kick out one person already, so that boarded. I was like, yeah, this isn't working out. I found you a place right down the street. Let me redirect you to a facility that you might find to be a little more helpful. You can't, especially if you live there, you can't tolerate anything that is going to change your living environment. You know, this is Chad in my home. We only have a 3-acre farm. Geez, 3 acres is awful small to be having fights on.
And you don't really even have a barn where they can be contained, you know, within the walls.
Nope.
Everything's kind of out in the open. So, no, I don't think those rules are – I'm surprised you didn't have those rules a year ago.
I know. I've been pretty slack. But, you know, it takes a year to figure out what works for you and what you need and what is worth saying. And, you know, to be honest with you, the whole rules thing just came up because I was trying to figure out a way to tell everybody – that they can't leave their children here, and also that prices are going up. Like, that was the main basis. I'm raising I just tried to pad it with some stuff.
We were always trying to figure out a way to charge for babysitting services. When we had a bunch of kids that would get off the bus at our house and then would spend the next, because we were boarding stable, so they would spend the next 3, 4, or 5 hours at our farm and then, you know, come in. We had a lounge that was actually an offset part of the house, so they could hang out in the lounge. But, you know, they would do their homework in there, and their parents would come pick them up at 7, 8 o'clock at night after getting off the bus in our house.
You know what? I say geez, but that was totally me. I didn't get off the bus, but I would stay at the barn. I would feed on Saturday morning and Sunday morning, and my mom would drop me off at 6 in the morning, and it would be dark before somebody would come to get me.
And, you know, that's part, when you're at a boarding stable, that's part of the experience. You know, if the kids are good and they're not screwing up and, you know, they follow the rules that are on the list, it's part of the experience of being just spending time around horses. One of the complaints right now, I think, and one of the criticisms of the way the world is changing is you spend a lot of time with horses. You learned about horses by being around them. A lot of these kids now get you know, their parents drop them off. They have an hour at the barn, and that's the only time they have with the horse, and then they go do shows. And then when something comes up, when the horse gets sick and they're at a show, they don't know what to do. And they don't know what to look for because they haven't spent that time around horses. So I think there's a balance there.
Yeah, there's got to be. There's got to be a balance somewhere. But, you know, obviously the way that we did it was obviously the best because we're awesome now, Jennifer, isn't that right? However we grew
Absolutely.
Up around them is the way that they need to be done. Except for the fact that my parents never made
me
wear a helmet.
Yeah, if you were really smart when you were hanging at the stables and it wasn't your home, you were hanging at somebody else's stables, you followed the rules carefully and kept quiet because you were less likely to be given chores. You know,
that's
if you
true.
Made a big bracket, draw attention to yourself, you're going to be the first one picked to cobweb.
Yeah. See, cobwebbing sucked. Hated that.
Oh, thing. That was the worst.
All right, well, you guys, let's wrap the show today. We'll get to all of our news tomorrow.
Where you're at. I have one. We haven't done one in a while. I have a rescue story. I have a new rescue story, something we have not seen before. And you know how many rescue stories we've done. We've probably done 100 on this show. But this is something
pools,
that we've not seen.
Quicksand, airplanes, water, the ocean, who knows, everywhere.
How about a flowing field of chicken manure? A massive pit of chicken droppings. This is in England. Fire crews were called to rescue a horse and its owner after they became trapped in a huge pit of chicken manure. Apparently, this cute little chestnut pony had got loose and managed to run his way, apparently took off, and ran his way, galloped right into this pile of chicken droppings that were spread about 2 feet thick or 3 feet thick in this field. And the horse went right in, and it became stuck. It was all the way up to its chest in chicken manure and couldn't move. Well, the owner thought that this woman was going to be brave and climbed in after the animal. I'm not sure if I'd have done that or called the fire department. I don't know which one I would have done there. Well, she then became stuck up to her waist and couldn't move in chicken manure. So fire crews were called to the scene. They used this inflatable thing that they blow up, and they put it across the top of the chicken manure that they use for water rescues, and she was able to get out that way, the owner. But they couldn't get the horse out that way. So they tried doing numerous things to get the horse out. None of them worked. They finally called it a huge backhoe, and they dug the chicken manure out till they got to the horse and were able to walk the horse out. So that was the first chicken manure rescue we've seen in a long time. And it took them 4 hours to get the horse out of the chicken manure.
That has got to be the stinkiest one we've possibly had. That's
disgusting. It is stinky. Our farm, the one we were just talking about, was right beside a chicken house. And let me tell you, when they cleaned up the chicken houses and spread them, that is the most stinky thing that you're going to smell. It really is. It's awful.
Oh, yeah, they go to fertilize fields with it. And then it would spread the fields, and you can't even ride in the fields anymore. I remember doing that. And anyway, that's disgusting. I'm glad that they rescued it. I would never be the same. Never.
Yeah, 12 showers would be about appropriate, I think. Okay, now you can finish the show.
All right, everybody. Have a great day. Go ride a horse some point. Spay, neuter, geld, start. Start them.
Start them. Good show, Jamie.
Thanks, Glenn.